Welcome to the Omics Exchange. I'm Angela Page. Today marks the 7th anniversary of the Global Alliance for Genomics and Health, or GA for GH, the International Standards Organization for Genomics. Today we're speaking with Peter Goodhand, CEO of GA for GH, and Ewan Burney, Chair of the GA for GH Executive Committee, as we reflect on GA for GH's role in advancing genomic and health-related data sharing, past, present, and future. Before we get started, a little more on our guests. Peter has been with us since GA for GH was founded in 2013, serving first as the executive director and now as CEO. He was involved in the initial planning for the organization before we even called ourselves the Global Alliance. Ewan joined as our third executive chair in 2016 and was instrumental in launching GA for GH Connect, a new strategic phase for the organization focused on connecting the needs of the broader community with the standards that GA for GH develops. Peter is based at the Ontario Institute for Cancer Research in Canada, and Ewan serves as the co-director of the European Bioinformatics Institute, or EBI, in the UK. So welcome, Peter and Ewan.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Great to be here.
GA for GH had its start in 2013 when 50 scientific leaders from 8 countries came to New York to discuss the shifting field of genomics. Peter, what was going on in the field to initiate that meeting?
It was a time of rapid transition. I think for probably a couple of years before it, people had realized that the massive reduction in the cost of genomic sequencing would take us from a few thousand whole genomes in a dozen institutions to tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of genomes in hundreds of institutions. And so if we could organize, if we could collectively organize the community, get ahead of that curve, we had the chance to create real value. And if not, we could create a lot of noise and confusion and slow down the progress from this massive opportunity. People realized we couldn't keep operating the way we had, got to modernize genomic research.
And Ewan, how did you first get involved with GA for GH?
So I've been involved with big genomics projects for a very, very long time, iconically the human genome, and also the institute, which I'm director of, EBI. We had a big stake in making genomics work for a very broad set of people. I think we came at it from that tradition of international genomics projects, making it work, realizing that there was going to be a shift to more medically based sequencing. But around 2015, we went through an internal process at EBI at looking at how our science was going to be used inside practicing healthcare. And something that we realized in that analysis was that we were either going to have to create a competitor to GA for GH, or we were going to have to make GA for GH very, very practically work for a large number of groups. We chose the latter. And so many of us across EBI engaged, myself as chair, but many other groups. And if you look at EBI's engagement with GA for GH, it went through a phase change around 2015, 2016.
So EBI was experiencing this phase change, and then you came on as chair of GA for GH in 2016 and initiated a phase change here by launching GA for GH Connect. Why was that pivot needed?
So there were lots of good work and interesting work happening inside of GA for GH at the time, but I noticed, and others, that there wasn't a connection to the incredibly practical questions that many of the people doing genomics in research and in healthcare delivery were facing.
And so that's what led to the concept of driver projects, right? So these are real-world projects that both contribute to standards development and help pilot released standards.
And of course, we, GA for GH, get both the concrete connection to real world problems, but also those engineers. We're a very open organization. We have many people who contribute who are not one of the members of these 23 different driver projects, but it has absolutely, I think, helped the way GA for GH think about standards development.
Peter, you've been with GA for GH since it was founded. I'm curious how the organization has changed and evolved over the years.
Yeah, in the beginning, it was very small. It was a handful of volunteer leaders, it was one or two staff members, it was a coalition of the willing. It was people who really wanted to make a difference and believed they could do better by working together. The real change over the last 7 years is we've scaled. We've got many, many more organizations. We've got a broader cross-section. We've got industry strongly represented. But we've also, particularly since Ewan joined us, become much more disciplined, much more structured on the product that we're actually creating. And we've made it a lot more effective for the benefit of the community.
And as GA4GH has grown, a key element has been a very strong global community contributing to standards development. How will GA4GH continue to strengthen that global aspect in the future?
We had global there in the name from the beginning. We have worked hard, but it's been a real effort to make this a truly a global enterprise. And that's because the strong contributions in the beginning came from a relatively few countries that have been doing genomics for a long time and doing it at scale. And so there was a natural tendency for those people who'd been involved in things like Human Genome Project, 1,000 genomes, to continue that collaboration. But we were very committed and very deliberate to go out and engage more of the global community. And I think the best way we've been able to do that is through growing the breadth and diversity of the driver projects. So the recent addition of the GEM driver project from Japan, or H3 Africa as a driver project, has given us a real reach into new continents. And I think in Europe, in partnership with Elixir, we've got a much stronger breadth of participation in Europe, whereas in the beginning, it was just one or two countries. So it's been a real effort, but I think that it's giving people the opportunity and then demonstrating value from their participation. We still have to struggle with time zones and travel, but we are well forward in making it more global than it's ever been in its existence.
You mentioned that the word global was in the name since the beginning. Why is it so important for a genomic standards organization to be global?
There's two reasons why it's important. One is what is science is about. And in science, we share things globally. Key fact, it's something that's been part of the scientific tradition for a very, very long time. And there would be something bizarre, frankly, to focus on a smaller number of countries or places. The second thing is the opportunity. Ultimately, in every country, probably nearly everyone will be sequenced over this century. It's a remarkable thing to say. It's a remarkable thing to imagine. We, as a global scientific community, want to be able to tap into that global opportunity with benefits flowing back globally to everybody on the planet. It's a bit cheesy, but it's nevertheless true.
So in 2017, you and Peter co-authored a paper where you estimated that 60 million clinical genomes would be sequenced by 2025, and we're almost halfway there. So is your prediction holding steady, or would you change it at this point?
So it's a good question. A number of people have asked me whether we should revise that prediction. I think we use the phrase some genomic assay, which is a little bit of wiggle room for this. But still, when we kind of do a rough benchmarking, it's fair to say we were slightly over-optimistic at the time. But my experience of these exponential curves is that one, it's very, very hard to judge how it's going to play out in the future, because it's not the case that these things grow linearly in any shape or form. So I am sticking to the prediction, because my experience is that it is as easy to underestimate as it is overestimate in these exponential curves. And I suspect we'll be closer to that number than the benchmarking perhaps suggests.
Yeah, and I would agree, Angela. I think I certainly know that in the clinical domain, we're still seeing different uses for large panels, for exomes and for whole genomes. People are getting much better at understanding which to use when and getting the clinical evidence of utility and value. But the other two high growth areas I'm seeing at the moment are in the area of population cohorts and biobanks, often in a public-private partnership. And also clinical trials. So I think the prediction about the number of genomes is well within scope. Maybe the way they're delivered, maybe not exactly the way we could have predicted back in 2017.
So switching gears a bit, I know for a lot of people, at least for me, when I first heard about standards, it's not the most exciting thing in the world. So I'm curious what keeps you both motivated.
There is an aspect of standards which sounds very dry and very uninteresting. It sounds like you're in a room for a long time with bad lighting and having very detailed discussions. Some of it is like that, but what really motivates me that moment is when you see things click where things just work. Your mobile phone, and you see the weather report, or something pings through on your phone, you think, yes, I'll follow up on that news story. There's a bunch of standards there that have worked. You're happy. You don't spend a lot of time worrying about it. You don't say to yourself, ooh, who set up that standard? They work for you. And in a similar way, we want to enable, in particular, clinicians and researchers to be able to have things that just work, things click together, things appear in the right place. And in particular, that's not just about the kind of protocol to get information around, but it's also about the representation of data. So you don't make mistakes. When you have your standards written down correctly, it becomes much harder to make certain classes of mistakes. And that means less bad information will get passed on, better results will happen across healthcare.
It's incumbent on us as the genomic specialists to work with those established standards organizations that industry and healthcare rely on, and they have to be accredited. So not just the precision and the avoidance of mistakes, these are very necessary elements of operating in industry setting and in the healthcare setting. And so the more we can add our specialist knowledge to those established standards, the better for everybody.
As we look towards the future, what is the ideal state of genomic data sharing that you'd like to see GA4GH enable?
I think the ideal state is when any researcher across the world who has a good research idea can easily execute it. That means the analysis, that means the ability to go through what will be necessary checks for doing that research, touching different data sets in different places. That means all the technical components to make that smooth, so that the science isn't limited by technology and the science isn't limited by process. We have to accept the fact that the science will be limited by ethics, legislation, and other aspects that are wrapped up with that. But I've not met any country or system that doesn't think that doing research for the benefit of health, for the benefit of all humankind, is not a good idea. So I don't think that although ethics and of course the legalities of what can do trumps research, I think one has to go back often to the underpinning aspect that research is a common good for everyone. So I just don't want the technical aspects to be our barriers.
The other paradigm shift that I'm seeing, and it is beyond genomics, is the move to a learning health system and a much more of a virtuous cycle of exchange of knowledge between research and healthcare and research. As we move into that way of looking at it, it's no longer about the research finding taking 10 or 15 years to move into healthcare practice. It's actually about how from every delivery of healthcare, from every episode of healthcare, can we learn and improve the healthcare of the next individual?
Great. Thank you both so much for joining us here on the Omics Exchange on the 7th anniversary of GA4GH.
It's my pleasure.
You're welcome.
Thank you for listening to the Omics Exchange, a podcast of the Global Alliance for Genomics and Health. The Omics Exchange podcast is produced by Stephanie Lee and Katie Forgey, with music created by Rishi Naj. GA4GH is the international standards organization for genomics, aimed at accelerating human health through data sharing. I'm Angela Page, and this is the Omics Exchange.